back to the latest episode of Chatting About Chan. I am your host, Ethan, and my co-host...
Mason.
And welcome to today's episode. Today we are covering The Magnificent Bodyguards, 1978, directed by Y. Lo. Lo Y, he goes by many of those. It's either, you know, either or. Director who is famous for making Bruce Lee a star, and then after Bruce Lee died, he moved on to Jackie Chan, and it did not work as well, and... I am so over Y. Lo movies, and boy, is this a Y. Lo movie. Jesus,
well
this
said.
Movie is just so convoluted and so dumb and filled with just too much talking. Yeah, obviously, as you can tell, yeah, Mason and I haven't talked about it. Oh, sorry. If you're new to podcasts, this is a podcast where we, Mason and I, who are both Chan heads, we're watching every single Jackie Chan film that he has ever received a starring credit in. And we're doing it just because why not? And it's perfect time. It's a pandemic. I'm not doing anything. Mason might be because he has a family. But yes, this is what we've been doing to keep ourselves busy. It's been great to see the evolution of Jackie. We're in the year of 1978, the year Jackie had 6 movies come out, which is just insane.
Yeah.
So yeah. Mason, what did you think of the movie before we dive into it?
Oh, I agree with you. I was texting Ethan during the movie, and I was like, this might be the worst one that we've seen. I mean, I guess I enjoyed it the least. I think we saw some of the movies that were probably technically worse, but at least they were interesting. They were interesting failures, you know. But this one was just, it just was bad by any measure. And it was so boring that I fell asleep, and it was so... you know, forgettable that I had to start it again because I couldn't remember anything that had happened. So I just, I went into it with already not being happy about it.
Yeah, it was a slog. I mean, there are other ones that we've watched that were a little bit slower. Like this one was boring, but it had a lot of action, but the action wasn't great. Yeah, it was just, and the performances were terrible. But having said that, there is a lot I want to talk about this movie. But there is definitely no shortage of that. So as we, before we get into nitty gritty, Mason, do you want to give us a very quick summary of what this movie is about? Because it's pretty simple to sum up.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Jackie Chan plays Lord Ting, a.k.a. Iron Fist. He's just kind of a generic badass fighter. And he gets recruited by a rich woman who says that her brother is sick. It needs treatment in a location that, in order to get to it, you have to cross over the Stormy Mountains, which is apparently a really evil, dangerous place. So she's looking to hire some magnificent bodyguards to accompany her on the journey. So she basically recruits Jackie, or Ting, to join her and basically to protect her and her brother as they're going across the mountain.
Yeah, that's it. And well, and then as they cross the mountains, they come across multiple bandits. They keep talking about the bandits, and the reason why it's so dangerous is because it is filled with bandits. Why the bandits live there, they don't tell you why. What the bandits have been doing for 10 years, they don't tell you what.
Classic. That was my question, was like, if they're bandits and they live in this mountain and they prey on people that go there, but everyone knows not to go there, who are they even robbing? How do they survive?
Right. Why are they, how did they not all starve to death? They said, oh, no one's been there for 10 years because it's filled with bandits. What? Then who are they robbing?
Right.
This classic, you know, it's not just why low. This is, you know, very much a problem, an issue with most of these kung fu films because they obviously, to their credit, like, no one's going to see them for the stories. I get that. But if we ever get to talk to Jackie, like, I want to ask him, like, did people actually pay to go see these movies? I guess. Because if I was alive during this time period, this is not the kind of film I'd want to go see in my free time. I want to go see a good film. I'm guessing that movie-going habits were a bit different back then. People were just like, hey, it's Friday, Saturday night. Let's go grab a few drinks and see a fun movie. I think that's kind of more what it may have been like, you know? Otherwise, I just would have been, if I was sitting in the audience, what the hell is this? What am I watching? I'm leaving. I want my money back.
And I wonder, too, my question for Jackie on this movie and others, what would be... like, when did you realize that this was a bad movie? Because
he has mentioned in his autobiography that he's very aware of the majority of the films that he made early in his career were not good.
But did he realize that when they were making it, or is it like when it finished and he saw the final product and he was like, "Oh, this isn't quite what we wanted it to be"? I just don't know. I'm just curious about what he would say about that. If he knew it was going to suck before he even the camera started rolling. That seems likely because the script couldn't have been any good.
That's a really good question. I think that's a, yeah, I'd love to hear him talk about that too. And I think Jackie would be open to talking about that. Anyways. So yeah, that's the summary for the film. And now let's really break it down because Jesus, there is a lot to talk about. And we've already kind of touched upon, let's talk about the plot. We've already pointed out that one of the major flaws, which is that the bandits have been there for 10 years and nobody has gone in there for 10 years. So let's talk about some other weird stuff that exists in this movie.
Yeah, so I one thing about this movie that was disappointing to me especially was that it kind of followed the template of a type of movie that I really like, which is where there's a team coming together. Think about Kung Fu Hustle or Shaolin Soccer. Those movies, or even the Blues Brothers, where they're putting the band back together. Or Star Wars: New Hope, where they're putting the team together. And that's sort of what the first half of this movie is. So it was like extra disappointing that it was somehow still a bummer and still barely watchable. But that's the first half of the movie is they're putting this team together. And so,
But you know what this movie reminded me a lot of 310 to Yuma. Did you ever see that?
yeah.
Where it's they have to well, except they had to bring a prisoner to the train, and here they just had it's the same idea as that, oh, we gotta get him there alive in one piece, and along the way they get attacked by bandits. Very like and also this movie from the get-go reminded me of a Western. Just the open it had Western style music, it had Western as in like from the genre. It had these long panning shots of beautiful landscapes, it was very similar to what you would see in a Western film. So I was like, okay, I guess they're trying to emulate a Western, which kind of makes sense. And like Mason said, they get the game together and stuff like that. It took an hour to do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm
Like,
saying. Yeah, but I'm reading the notes on the other members of the crew, and it's like it sounds like a really cool movie, but it just wasn't. So like the second.
how about the guy he recruits who's deaf? But that doesn't play into the movie at all,
Yeah,
except for one
for
moment.
one tiny scene. Yeah, it's the leather repairman.
The leather repair. The
Yeah.
actor doesn't even act deaf. They go, "Hey, how come he can talk to us?" He goes, "Oh, he can read lips." What? And so then the entire film, he's just conversing with everyone as if he can speak and as if he can hear properly.
Yeah, that was stupid. And his power is he's good at kicking people.
Oh right, yeah, he's a big kicker.
And
So there's that, and then there's the whole thing with like with the so the woman says, "Oh, my brother's sick. He's in the sedan, and he's not the car, and he's very sick." And they go, "What's wrong? Can I see him?" "No. The wind makes him sick."
the wind will
What?
hurt
And
him,
everyone
yeah.
just the wind, and everyone just accepts it. And then all right, so they go and by like I wrote this down by minute 30, they get to the town before the Stormy Mountains, and there's a lady there who runs a restaurant, and they recruit their first band member. His name is Skin. What is his name?
I thought it was like Ch Chang or
Oh
S
no, oh never
Sang.
mind. Everybody has these names like powerful, like Jackie Chan's character is Iron Fist, and the other guy is Big Kicker, and then they go, "Oh, Master Tang." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
He's and his power is he rips people's skin off,
Yeah.
like their flesh. So the mood for this movie is pretty light, but the violence is really intense. Like all the violence is intense, and the fight scenes are the if I thought the fight scenes in the previous Kung Fu films were slow or and just very yeah slow, the this one it's as if somebody turned up the speed to these by 10. They're a lot faster. They're harder. They are harder hitting. Yeah, it was, but they weren't better. I can't say
I
that.
thought they were really
It was, and
uneven.
it.
I thought they were really uneven. There were some great fight sequence, even like within a fight sequence, some of the choreography was great and others were like embarrassingly bad. Like some of the weapons are made of like you can tell it's aluminum foil and you can just see the blade like flopping around. It's like, come on, guys, just Step it up.
And even just the bad guys weren't very creative. Once they get to the Stormy Mountains, they use like the same valley location for every confrontation. When they get to the Stormy Mountains, they come across what are almost like Native Americans. And then when you go to the Stormy Mountains, you're going to come across four deputies. And they spend no time on these deputies. None of them have cool powers. They're all very boring, and they all get defeated rather easily. And the whole buildup was, oh, there's this guy. His name is, what's his name? Master, the bad guy's name is...
Lord Chu.
Lord Chu. And so he's like the final boss. So they keep building up to him. And throughout the whole, as the story slowly progresses, you never see the guy in the sedan. They go to see if he's in there at one point, but he's not. But then in the next scene, you see his hand come out. He asks for water. So long story short, there's a bunch of dumb fights. We're going to dive into the weird elements of those later. And then when they get to Lord Chu, this is where it gets insane. Like, just again, I don't think people cared about the quality of the story. They just wanted to see action.
Yeah,
like, Mason, my mind was blown by this twist.
Me too. I mean, so
because it made no sense.
The whole story does like a. I thought the movie definitely improved in the last like 15-20 minutes, and that whole sequence starts with Jackie in a graveyard, walking on top of a grave, and there's a trap door that opens up, and he falls into a snake pit, straight out of Indiana Jones, except. There's like
before Indiana Jones.
They're hurling dead snakes at Jackie. There's just like a ton of dead snakes flopping all around him. It's just great. It's just it's an absurd looking scene. Like I don't know if it was going for laughs.
So let's talk about this. I don't think those were dead snakes. Some of them were clearly rubber.
Some of them were rubber. Some were alive. Some were definitely dead snakes.
So Jackie, like, this sequence goes on way too long. It's like a minute long, but it feels longer. And he falls in, and so there's a snake that keeps jumping at the camera repeatedly, and it's very fake.
Oh, we forgot to talk about that.
10 times. No, we are. No, we're talking about that after we talk about the plot.
All right.
So the snake jumps at the camera like 10 times, and then at one point, Jackie grabs the snake and just starts randomly swinging around his head like a lasso, and then he throws it on the ground, and it keeps cutting to, and then when he throws it on the ground, it's clearly a fake snake. And then it keeps cutting all these snakes moving on the ground. They all look, they're real and they're big. So that was pretty freaky. But you can tell, oh yeah. So it opens, when he falls into this pit, it's like these caverns open up with the snakes in them. And you can clearly see like people throwing the snakes down into the pit. They're not just falling. They're being like dumped. Jesus, Wilo. You're a terrible director, man. It's like... awful. So anyways, that was interesting. And then Jackie gets into the temple and he finds Master Chu, and so begins a very confusing finale where Master Chu says, hey, who's in the sedan? Reveal yourself. And the guy finally comes out, and it's Master Chu. And I thought to myself, oh, it's his long lost brother. No, they don't even say that. They just start fighting. And as they're fighting, I could not believe this. The Master Chu, who came out of the sedan, grabs the original master's face and then rips his face off, and it's a mask, and it was the woman who ran the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what? Like...
hey, you didn't see it coming.
No, I didn't.
Gotta give him some credit for that.
And then, so anyways, that was the crazy twist, and then they kill the woman, and, Master Chu says to Jackie and the other bodyguards, oh, you can't leave. You have to stay here forever. And they say, no way. And so then they get into a fight. And their fight transitions to a forest in one shot. And then the movie ends with Jackie and another character. Imagine a wide shot. Master Chu's in the middle. Jackie and the other character both jump up in the air as if they're about to come down with their fists angled down. And the movie just freeze frames. And it says, the end. And it ends. Like, classic, crappy kung fu film.
Yeah, I was like, this is the worst ending that we've seen.
Easily. No, there's no question. Oh, by the way, going backwards a little bit, the guy Skin Ripper, I could not believe this. So, like, his name is Skin Ripper, and you see him rip off a guy's arms early in the movie, And then sometimes he'll kill people by just punching them, so it's not consistent. But, of course, he was it the old woman or was it a different woman?
A different. I think it was the woman that hired them, wasn't it?
So the woman that hires them, he's fighting her? So at the end, it's like everyone just fights each other. And when they're after Master Chu's revealed, and the Skin Ripper rips off the face of the woman who hired him. Just so graphic and out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was,
and unnecessary.
It was crazy. I was like, that seems like from a different movie.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, that was exactly. Like a Tarantino level of violence, you know?
Totally. And then the last thing I want to highlight about this insane movie in regards to set pieces is they fight a bunch of evil Buddhist monks in a temple. Mm-hmm. And the highlight of that is, like, they fight them, and then they kind of defeat one of them. And so the Buddhist monks leave the room and shut the doors, and then they lower a bunch of bells, and they try to kill them, like, death by bell. They just ring the bells really loudly.
The Chamber of the Monster Bells.
Chamber of the Monster Bells. Also, that sequence went on for way too long.
It was.
That was like a 15-minute sequence.
My note about that was that was the only part that was actually a little bit scary. Which was funny because they keep talking the whole movie, and there's even, we'll go back to this later, but there's a song that sets up the movie like at the midway point.
Oh my
point,
God, which
was strange. But they keep talking about how hellish the mountain is and how terrifying it is, but the whole movie is really brightly lit and has kind of upbeat music and everyone's kind of jovial. So it just totally didn't work, you know? But
that's what I'm saying, man. Like, these kung fu films just don't care about any of that. It's just pure, they just want to have fighting. And that's it. There's no master of tone, mood, dialogue, story. It's just, it's crazy. And I don't know why these movies are so long. This was an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Before we finish talking about the film, let's talk about the song that you said comes on halfway through. That's like a jovial scene. Because that, again, the best part of that song, the song pretty much, the lyrics just sums up all the characters in the film and what they do. And then when it's over, it repeats. It starts playing again.
Yeah, it's like, just, it's like it explains the journey, and then it kind of like, Ting, he's the guy that has an iron fist. You know, it's like it, it's,
oh, and nine lives.
Yeah,
nothing
it's like,
can
it's,
kill him.
It's very sing-songy, and I don't even know what to compare it to, because it's not like it's not quite like a blaxploitation kind of, you know, Shaft kind of thing where they're singing about the plot. It's almost more like something from an old Disney movie or something. It's very
Weird. Yeah, and so that's when they're entering the Stormy Mountains. As if, in case you forgot what the movie was about, they tell you through this song. So, yeah.
I like to think of that as Lo Wei trying to address his criticisms of his movies being too confusing by throwing that little song to help us.
That's a good
keep
point.
Keep track of the plot.
I wonder. You know, I'm trying when we do these podcasts. I try to avoid reading other people's reviews because I don't want their thoughts to be influenced on my thoughts. So I don't know if the consensus on Lo Wei was that, like, is that people are like, dude, you suck. Your movies suck. You know, they're all way too confusing, too much talking. Like, oh, and then, before they explain to you the movie through the song, they explain the entire movie to you when the flesh guy, the flesh ripper, talks to the woman who owns the restaurant. She explains the entire movie. It was like, she's like a character from a video game.
Yeah.
It's just pure exposition. She goes, oh, if you ever get in trouble, find a man with six fingers. Here's a golden token. Give it to him and he'll save your life. What? Just like a get out of free jail card like that? That's such lazy screenwriting.
Yeah.
I got to know, when we meet Jackie, like, what do you think of these movies now? Have you watched them? I have to know. Like, I'd love to watch some of these older films with him.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
And just hear his commentary.
Even if we don't get to meet him, awesome. I think it'd be great if he would one day record like a commentary track for some of these old movies, you know? That would be amazing.
Yeah. Be amazing. So good. All right, so that's the movie summarized. Let's now dive into the very strange elements. Other than besides I guess we should obviously talk about Jackie. There's not much to say. He gives a very, I think he is the most comfortable I've seen in a dramatic role in this movie. He seems very, not as just his character isn't just very confident, but Jackie seems very confident in his acting and his martial arts abilities. He's got no problem. He strolls through this film like it's nothing.
It's barely a character. He doesn't.
It's hardly a character, but it's not like he's not acting. He's not Jackie.
Right.
He's definitely something else. So, yeah, I mean, not, Jackie was doing some very, as Low Way films call for, simple martial arts, nothing crazy. So, yeah, that's Jackie's performance. I got nothing, like no classic Jackie, no stunts, no comic antics, just straight up very choreographed martial arts fighting scenes.
Yep.
Now let's get into the weird shit.
Well, one thing we should have probably talked about at the beginning that we failed to is that I believe this was a 3D movie. And so...
Yeah, so I didn't even know that. So, did you know that?
I thought we did. I thought I read about that before I watched it, yeah.
So, I did not know that until like 30 minutes ago before we started the podcast. I saw the poster and it said, in 3D, mind-blowing 3D. And so, that explains a lot. So, yeah, it means you want to...
Yeah, because in classic, you know, 3D movie fashion, there's a lot of sequences where things are being thrust into the camera, like the bases of swords and spears and limbs and
snakes
and bell mallets.
And kicks. They kick at the camera. They punch at the camera. There's a lot of that. Even though I can't imagine that would look that good in 3D.
No.
It was more like, yeah, they would punch. It was so funny. There would be a guy, imagine two people in front of the camera, and the second guy would move behind the camera, and then the first guy would position himself to look directly at the camera, then punch it. It was so awkward.
It was weird, but you know, that part at least was interesting, you know?
Yes, it did. It kept the movie barely alive, you know, it was because it just looked so stupid. And the first time it's noticeable in the very beginning of the movie with the spears, but it's insanely noticeable when they first enter the Stormy Mountains. You can almost see the wire that these fake rocks are on coming right at the camera. And they're not just, they're like smashing into the camera. It's crazy.
And, yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah. So there is this whole 3D aspect of the movie that I was totally unaware of. So I was very caught off guard, and that was one of the few entertaining things in the movie. But let's get to the biggest, weirdest part. And I just want to preface this. So before I usually do this with most of the movies we watch. I'll go online and I'll find a trailer to watch. And so many of the times these trailers are poorly recut trailers for Western audiences. So they usually use like stock voices they use dub voices and stock music that will never appear in the movie. Kind of like when you watch a movie trailer today and they use a crappy new age cover of a classic rock song.
Oh yeah.
It most likely will not. that's a topic for another podcast, but most likely it will not appear in the movie. So I watched the trailer for Magnificent Bodyguards, and heavily featured is Star Wars music from A New Hope. I'm like, okay, that's super random. That doesn't work at all, but it's just for the trailer. Whatever. So after the trailer, I say to myself, okay, that's weird. They use the Star Wars music. You know, I'm sure that has happened where movies will use music from other movies, whatever. So I get that on my mind. I put on the movie. And in the first 45 minutes, there are moments where there's little snippets of music for like 3 to 5 seconds, but they're faint and they kind of sound like they're from Star Wars. And I'm like, wait, is that from this? Is that the Star Wars score or a very heavily influenced score? They're more like musical cues than actual pieces of the score. So I'm like, what? That's weird. Okay, whatever. And then we get to a sequence in the middle of the movie where they are surrounded by all the bad guys in the middle of a valley in the Stormy Mountains. And they just, it's as if there was a DJ and he just pressed play and they just took entire chunks from A New Hope.
Yeah.
We're talking the Vader's entrance, the music from when the X-Wings are in the trench being chased by the TIE fighters, just crazy.
Yeah, it's just crazy. The bandits come over the hill, and it's just... I was like, oh, holy shit.
There's no way this is legal. No. Because this came out in 1978, so a year after Star Wars did, right?
Yeah.
And this movie was already low budget enough. You're telling me they had the money to purchase the license to use the music from the biggest movie of the decade? Are you kidding me? There's just no way, right? So I went online and I typed in, you know, Magnificent Bodyguard, Star Wars, A New Hope. And sure enough, there was a bunch of stuff that showed up. And somewhere I read, I think it was on Reddit, someone wrote that apparently in the 2002 DVD re-release of this movie, they replaced the score because I guess it's deleted, right? So I'm like, wait, so then this is the original Chinese version uploaded on Amazon? Are you kidding me? If this movie was uploaded, can you imagine, man? If this movie is uploaded to YouTube, it would be a copyright strike because it's someone else's music. That's what would happen.
I don't know how they got away with it. I don't know. I'm glad we saw it.
I don't want to be that.
I'm glad we saw it.
I don't want to be that guy, but it's like, you could totally write to George Lucas or Lucasfilm and be like, hey, there's a movie on Amazon that is using your score and I doubt you're receiving the royalties for it. And then... We could just do it anonymously.
Or sir, John Williams. John Williams might be upset about it.
John Williams is probably really upset, man. He's 89 years old. I doubt he knows this movie exists. I bet, I have a feeling George Lucas probably heard through the grapevine. I mean, this is such a bizarre thing. I'm sure somebody, they must know, and they probably just don't care. Because it's just too weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just, again, just such large, for like a good 5 to 8 minutes of the musical score from A New Hope in this movie. It never works. It's super random, extremely out of place, last thing I was ever expecting. But like Mason said, I'm glad I heard it. Oh, and that reminds me of something I forgot to say from the last movie. The opening song for the last movie, Snake and Crane, Shaolin Arts, the song used in that doesn't really matter. This is just a very random trivia fact. The song used in the opening sequence for that movie is the same song that was used in the opening sequence for Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And apparently the song is hard to find in general, so I don't know why they felt like they should use that in the Jackie Chan film. I have no idea, but I just thought it was random. So yeah, I think that's all those are all my notes. Let me check on the weird stuff. Yeah, that's it.
I only have one other big note that I wrote and circled and it put multiple arrows pointing to it. And I just said that these scenes where it's like a room full of people watching, standing around watching two people fight, are really stupid.
Oh yeah.
And I'm over it. I'm over that. I don't want to see any more of that. You know, it's just embarrassing. Like, it's just so weird. And like, it just sucks the energy out of the fight for me because it's just like, why are all these people just standing around watching their boss fight some nobody? You know, I don't get it.
To be fair, that is a common... I feel like that's a common trope in martial arts films in general.
I just think the way it's done in low-A movies just is extra egregious. It's just extra stupid.
I agree with that. But can we talk about how low-A is the same person who somehow directed Fist of Fury? It's as if someone else totally directed that.
Well, think about it.
There's no trademarks from that movie carried over into any of these Jackie films.
I'm sure that Bruce Lee... had a hand in making that movie what it was, you know? I think he had a bigger creative say in that than Jackie had in these movies.
But the way it was shot, the use of slow motion, even the lenses, the movie looked great. And then it's as if Waylo's like, oh, might as well like try and, you know, desperately try and see if I can squeak out another superstar by putting minimal effort into his movies. You know, they just suck.
And obviously
Jackie knew that because he left for Golden Harvest, I think in 78, because the movie sucked and Jackie knew he was better than that. Waylo movies are just awful. I think there's only one more that we have of him with Jackie. It's called Dragon Fist, and I pray to God that's the last one.
It's a good name.
Yeah, so have several other films that we've watched had good names.
A Magnificent Bodyguard is not a great name.
Yeah. It's okay. I don't know. So the next movie we're watching is Half a Loaf of Kung Fu. That's a good name. I don't even know what the hell that means. But that's a good name. And it's on Criterion, which is going to be awesome.
I can't wait. I'm gonna watch it happily.
And hopefully, you know, actually, I think the extras, the Jackie Chan extras, are not on those movies. The extras are on the on Police Story.
Oh.
So Mason, if you click on Police Story and Criterion, you can watch all the awesome extras they have on there.
Oh, sweet! I'm gonna check that out before we even get to those movies because I love those.
Yeah, they have Edgar Wright talking about them, and they have other, you know, Asian film scholars and stuff. I've watched a little bit of some of it, but that was months ago, so I'll probably rewatch it. Yeah, that's right. I watched the 10-minute intro with that Asian film scholar guy, and that was really good, where he just talks about who Jackie is and what he and like what he stands for and his whole thing. It's great. It's a very good featurette. So yeah, next is Half a Loaf of Kung Fu. That's The Magnificent Bodyguards. Jesus, I'm so happy we're getting closer to the 80s. So we're almost there.
This is a good time for me to bring up something I was thinking about too with these movies. You know, the interesting thing is that, to me, is that like they all take place in like this kind of ancient fantasy era of China, which you can only take that so far from my point of view. Like it just becomes sort of a stale setting, you know, to see over and over again.
Mason, it's literally the same thing that happened with the Western in Hollywood. It's the exact same thing. They just beat it to the ground. It's the exact same thing.
But the unfortunate part about it and the ironic part about it is that, like, you know, late 70s China and Hong Kong is a really interesting setting. You know, I love seeing that.
Oh, sure. Stuff. Oh, for sure.
Like, it's just so much cooler. And they do shift to that a bit later. But I just wish they had more movies that actually took place, you know, during the then modern times, you know.
You know what, man? I bet you Wilo's that guy. If you met him, you're like, oh, he's probably like a fat guy with a cigar in his mouth. Like, oh, what are you talking about? Audiences love, they love traditional Chinese films, folk Chinese films with the fights and the mountains. Oh, they love that stuff. No, they don't. Yeah, they do, but the numbers suck. I don't give a shit. Just do it.
Yeah.
I bet you that was Wilo.
Hey, it worked 20 years ago. It'll work now.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to find some interviews with Wilo because I'm very curious to see what kind of guy he was like.
Yeah.
Because clearly I don't think very highly of his movies.
I bet he's pretty bullish, you know?
Dude, you wouldn't be amazing? I was thinking about this. Like, I would love to direct a Jackie Chan biopic. It would be fascinating. Like, I think I've talked about this in almost every podcast, but just the visual image of seeing Jackie wearing rags, working on these super rural, crappy sets, dusty sets, cameras on wooden tripods, just like trashed, working in million, gazillion dollar sound stages. It's just mind blowing.
Well, plus,
it's just crazy.
Plus, it just lines up nicely with as actual films. You know, it would be like a Jackie Chan movie. You know, you could make it.
Oh,
that
yeah,
way.
For sure.
Which I think would
and
be
I,
cool.
And I'd have to have Final Cut. It would have to be 3.5 hours long, just because. And I would probably focus more on his film career than his personal life, because his film career is so much more interesting. And I don't really the personal life may have influenced, like, obviously in music, I think a person's personal life influences more, or if you're a writer or a director. But if you're an actor, I don't really know how much that influences the projects you choose. I think Jackie really approached his project as a filmmaker. Like, he clearly was trying to kind of get on some of the trends that were popular in the West and bring those to his own movies in Hong Kong, and while also doing his thing at the time. And I'm much more interested to see that than I am about what was going on behind the scenes with JC and all that crap.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it for this week. And next week we'll be back with Half a Loaf of Kung Fu. I'm pumped. I'm sure the restoration on Criterion Channel is going to look awesome. And I can't wait to talk about it with Mason.
Can't wait to. I can't wait to see it on Criterion.
And you can find us, you know, we're on YouTube. You can listen to us on all major streaming platforms. And you can hit me up on the Final Frame on Instagram. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.